This morning in this part of the show, we'll be talking a little bit about where it is that people go for health information and the fact that more and more, perhaps outside of their doctors, people are seeking out health information. It's reported that last year, in fact, more than 122 million people sought out information about some kind of personal health concern. Now, they used a lot of different sources. They talked with people they knew. They looked at books. They looked at magazines. But what's interesting is that the internet is really leading the way. There's been a big jump in use of the internet to get health information. This morning, in this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking a little bit about online health information, getting it, using it, who is, who isn't, how reliable is it, and we have two guests joining us. Lisa Massengale is an assistant information services librarian at the University of Illinois Chicago at the Health Sciences Library there, where she's involved in providing reference services and library instruction and web design and maintenance. And she's particularly interested in this whole business of using the web as a source of health information. Also joining us is Susanna Fox. She is the former editor of the website for U.S. News and World Report magazine. She's also worked as a researcher for Real Networks and for the Harwood Group. She speaks often on topics like the internet's impact on healthcare, also things like privacy and security online. She has appeared at conferences all across the country, sponsored by a lot of different organizations, including the American Medical Informatics Association and the American Public Health Association and the Federal Trade Commission. And they're both joining us this morning by telephone. So as we talk, certainly people who are listening are welcome to call in and ask questions. The number there, same number we always use, 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. So at any point here, you have questions, you can give us a call. Well, Lisa Massengale, hello.
Hello.
And Susanna Fox, hello.
Glad to be here.
Well, we appreciate both of you giving us some of your time. I think that the subject is quite interesting. Maybe we can talk just right at the beginning about the if you look at the numbers of people who are looking for health information and how those numbers have grown. Can somebody put some numbers on there? Maybe Ms. Fox, can you do that?
Sure, I'd be happy to. The Pew Internet and American Life Project does nationwide telephone surveys. We're now including cell phones in our survey sample for any listeners who are cell phone only. You're still going to be included in our sample. And we currently find that about 75% of adults use the Internet. And of those, 80% of Internet users have looked for health information online.
Mm-hmm. I think that's an important thing that emerges out of these kinds of surveys, and it's true apparently still that people are still they're reading magazines, they're reading books, they're looking at print sources, but it seems that if you look at the how use of those various sources has increased over time, the biggest jump over time has been in the increase in the numbers of people using the internet for that purpose.
Yes, and one of the key trends to watch is the penetration of high-speed or broadband connections to the home, which makes the internet more like an always-on information appliance. We find that people are doing health searches at any time of the day or night, whereas that kind of media is not available in the same way. You might tune in to a certain TV show that gives health tips, but when you have a question and it's 2 a.m., the internet is there. Very few other resources are available like that.
And if you look at these people and look at their individual demographics, obviously one of the things you would have to have is you'd have to have in your home, you'd have to have a computer and you'd have to have an internet hookup. But other than that, is there anything in particular about these people that distinguishes them?
When we're just looking at internet users who go online for health information, it's more likely to be the middle age groups. Our elders who have a lot of health questions often turn to a doctor. They are more likely to turn to a doctor or to printed material for health information. And our youngest internet users have very few health questions. They're still healthy, so they're not likely as likely to go online. So we're really looking at people between 30 and 65, essentially. Women are more likely than men, but we see that it cuts across education. And what's also interesting is that it cuts across your experience level with the Internet. It's something that people do, whether they're a very new and inexperienced Internet user or if they've been online a long time.
Let me turn to Lisa Massengale. Now, you work at the Health Sciences Library there at the U of I, Chicago. So I expect that probably a lot of the people that use your library are medical students or their university faculty, and they're people who maybe have a professional interest in the field. Do you find that for people like that, more and more they're also using the Internet to read research and do research?
Oh, definitely. We do have most of our community is the students, and a lot of times they're not aware of how much the library is involved with the information they find. Since they can find a lot of things in the lab or in their dorm room or their apartment, they don't realize that the library is purchasing all these journals and things. So they're definitely using the Internet as an access point. Mm-hmm. But I think we're a victim of our own success. We're doing a lot behind the scenes to make sure they do have access to these materials.
One thing that I had read is that there seems to be a trend that perhaps more of this, of the kind of information that people in the health sciences would use, is available only online. Do you think that over time what's going to happen is that there's going to be less and less information that ever gets committed to print, and that for some of that information, online is the only way that you'll be able to access it?
For some things, there is definitely a push to put it online because it makes it more people can access it at a time.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of, when we get to the professional literature that's still put out in print, it's just we're going to focus more on making it available online because that seems to be how most of our users say they want it. But there is still the print available. It's just not as widely as available as it's been in the past.
Yeah. Let me go back to Ms. Fox. I'm interested in talking a little bit more about some of the survey that has been done. And I know among the questions that people were asked about the information that they found, particularly the online information, but not necessarily that, is they just were asked, well, was this helpful? Did you get something out of it? And it seems that in fact that people really do, they do come back to you and say, yes, I really felt that this helped me. And I don't know whether that was a case of it maybe made them less worried or perhaps it made them feel more like they did have some sort of serious issue and then that they used that information when they went and they talked to their doctor.
That's a great question. And what we found is about half of people who had recently searched for health information say that their last search had an impact on their own health care or the way they take care of someone else. And we followed up and asked people, well, what kind of an impact did it have? And we saw especially an interesting trend among people who are living with a chronic condition. They are more likely to say that their last search affected a decision about how to treat an illness or a condition. They are also more likely to say that the information they found online led them to ask a doctor new questions or to get a second opinion from another doctor. And e-patients with chronic conditions, that's the shorthand. I say e-patients when I mean Internet users who have gone online for health information.
Mm-hmm.
They are also more likely than other people to say that the information they found online changed the way they cope with that chronic condition or the way they manage pain. And you bring up a really interesting point about whether they felt more fearful or overwhelmed. We gave people choices about how they felt during their last search. And we really didn't know what we were going to find, whether people would say that they felt reassured or versus confused. And we found that across the board, whether this was someone who is essentially healthy or someone who is living with a chronic disease, most people said that they felt positive feelings after their last health search. They were more likely to say 7 out of 10 said they felt reassured that they could make appropriate health care decisions. 59% said they felt relieved or comforted by the information they found online. They felt confident. They felt eager to share their new health information. However, there were groups of people who said they felt overwhelmed, confused, and even frightened by the information that they found online.
Mm-hmm.
Those were small groups, but very important to note because sometimes it's our most vulnerable populations who said that they felt overwhelmed or confused. It's those with less education who might not have the resources to get to other sources of information to navigate, like, frankly, like a really good medical librarian would be able to help them navigate. If left alone, people with less education are more likely to say they felt confused by the information they found online.
Hmm. Well, this now, I better turn back to the medical librarian. And one of the questions, Lisa, that I was really interested in having you talk about is the issue of access. And particularly if, you know, we say that the internet can be a great source of information and comfort and support and so forth. That's great if you've got it. But does that, if indeed we start moving in more and more in that direction, is that going to be pose a bigger problem for those people who don't, for, you know, don't have access, and maybe that's just simply because they can't afford it?
Oh, that's kind of a yes and no. I mean, we are definitely working. Most libraries are trying to put more computers in the library so people always can come in and have access. But again, that's only during the hours we're open.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely a push to make have more access points, especially when you're in neighborhoods that are underserved. But you're right. If, you know, for people who are at home trying to look for things that they don't have that access, that could be a problem, because especially with trying to fill out medical forms or, you know, do your documentation for Medicare, we're finding a lot of that's been pushed online. And if you don't have access, and then, you know, that's the first obstacle, but then also getting through the forms, that's kind of an obstacle too. So we are always looking at ways we can make access much more readily available.
Yeah. Our guest, let me just introduce real quickly again, Lisa Massengale. She is an assistant information services librarian at the Health Sciences Library at the U of I Chicago, where she is involved with providing reference services and library instruction and web design and maintenance. Also joining us is Susanna Fox. She is the former editor of a website for U.S. News and World Report magazine. Right now, she works as associate director at the Pew Internet and American Life Project, and she's been involved in doing some of this work and looking at some of this research about how it is that people use health information, particularly information that's found online. And she talks a lot about things like the internet and its impact on healthcare. And we're talking about health information that's available online. And particularly one of the things we will be talking about is trying to determine what's good and what's not. And questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. I wanted to ask Susanna Fox, one other thing that I think is really interesting is that not only do people have now access to sort of very general, large general kind of databases about health, they have particularly, and this is going to be useful for people who do have chronic conditions, there are websites for just for that thing, that problem that they have. And I think that it's what's really interesting is that it's made it possible for people to link up with other people who are coping with the same issues so that they can share information. It's good for families to share information about family members. It's been quite a tool that can bring people who are physically distant, can bring them together.
That is exactly right. And that's one of the most interesting aspects of online health information. And people will hear different catchphrases about it, user-generated content or Web 2.0. And again, it goes to the trend of broadband, where we have these nice high-speed connections that allow us to not only read what's going on online and download the videos, but also upload podcasts, upload videos, and upload content, so that we're seeing an amazing explosion of user-generated content that allows people to find what I've heard is a just-in-time someone like me. so that you might not have anybody in your town or your neighborhood who has the exact same conditions, but you can go online and find through one of these specific websites or through a listserv, through these online communities, you can find other people who are dealing with the same condition that you are and compare notes on treatment, or just commiserate and say, how are you dealing with the pain today? Or weight loss has actually been a really wonderful way for people to connect. People are able to trade diet tips and sort of coach each other as they go along. You know, let's make it through the night. Let's not eat that midnight snack. And again, the internet is always there. Your nutritionist might not be.
Mm. The big question, and I'm sure that we want to spend some time talking about it, and maybe I'll just open it up and ask Lisa, you can talk a little bit about it, is how do you determine when you're looking at information that you found on the web that that information is sound? That not only is it sound, but that it's current. I mean, it's possible it might have been good a year ago or 2 years ago, but sometimes it's hard to figure out when that was posted, but then also to figure out, well, where did that information come from and how reliable is it?
Well, yeah, that gets into website evaluation, looking for things like, is it easy to find out who the source of the information, where it's coming from? Is it coming from a university or a government organization as opposed to being a .com, which tends to be commercial? Do they clearly post what years on the page? I mean, these are things like if you are putting together a health site, the good ones usually do make sure to have these things on there. You know, very clearly, who's the site from? Who's giving you the information? Is it researchers? When did it come out? When was it last updated? So we always, like when we teach classes to people for consumer health, these are the things we tell them to always look for. If it's not readily available, mm-hmm. it could be good information, but you don't necessarily know. And always, you know, a site should have a disclaimer saying this is for health information only. You need to consult with your doctor. So we just kind of give people a few tips for things to look for a good site to look for your health.
Are there any particular sites that you like or that you feel that you can recommend?
We always start with Medline Plus, which is put out by the National Library of Medicine. They give money to their library to do some more consumer health, especially when you get to people with low literacy or who don't necessarily speak English as the first language. But the first one we always tell people to go to is Medline Plus because it's probably the most comprehensive consumer health site out there right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Ms. Fox, in any that you particularly feel like you can recommend?
Wanted to follow up on is we did a study using the recommendations from the Medical Library Association that people look for the source and date of the information. And in two separate surveys, we found that internet users are not likely to be looking for those two key information quality indicators. But then we found that actually the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services had commissioned a study looking at the websites. So while we were looking at consumers, they were looking at websites to see how many websites actually display the source and date of information. They found that only between 2% and 4% of websites, health websites, actually display those quality indicators. Mm-hmm. And so while it might be great to try and look for those, I just want to make sure that consumers don't get frustrated by looking for what is essentially a needle in a haystack. That Medline Plus definitely follows the rules and has the source and date of information, as do many sites that are associated with universities. And also, frankly, some of the major .com websites very clearly display the source and date of the information. But in this new age where so much helpful information is being generated by the consumers themselves, and here I'm not talking about treatments. I'm talking about home care tips, where if you are living with someone with a disability and you need just basic home care tips, that sort of thing can often be found in a community site that, again, is not going to have a vetted source attached to it, but which patients are often finding to be very useful information.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, of course, a different thing than a kind of a site that might have information on therapies, on medications, on surgeries, on treatments, things like that. That's a sort of a different. You're talking about the kind of thing that's where people get together and they say, "Well, look, this was my experience, and this is what I tried, and this is what I found worked." So you might try that and see how that goes for you. That's sort of a different. That's a different level. And I'm not saying that that's not useful information. That can be really useful information, but it's sort of a different thing than if someone's deciding, well, should I have a particular kind of treatment, or should I have a particular kind of surgery, or do I want take a particular kind of medicine?
Right. And one more thing to follow up is to cite, there was the journal Cancer published a study last year which looked at cancer-related websites and looked for the source and date of information on the page. And they actually found that the absence of source and date is not correlated with low-quality information. It's also not correlated. If the source and date appeared, it's actually not correlated with the presence of high-quality information. The only marker for inaccurate information about cancer was on the pages that had information about complementary and alternative medicine, or what some people shorten as CAM. CAM pages were 15 times more likely than other pages to have inaccurate information. So, again, while source and date is very important, it's something that is not necessarily a silver bullet for consumers.
Yeah. Well, just, Lisa, is there... In addition to that, I mean, here we're saying this as you're assessing the information, one of the very first things that you want to know is how recent is this? So you want to know the date, and you want to know what the source is. But as Susanna Fox just said, well, that's no guarantee that it's good or that it's bad. Other than that, are there particular things that you would suggest that people think about as they're assessing the information that they're reading?
Well, one thing we always stress is most of these sites are for informational use to, you know, give you suggestions, but you also want to always collaborate with your healthcare provider that, you know, the site should be very clear on this for informational use to give you more information to kind of, you know, be part of a more active consumer of healthcare just so you can talk to your doctor. So, I mean, a lot of it is people look at and they assess for themselves as a good information based on what they know about a particular disorder or disease. But at the end, they should definitely talk to their doctor before they make decisions.
We're about at a midpoint here, and I hope the two of you won't mind if we just pause for just a moment to remind people who are listening to the radio station that the station needs their support. One of the things that we know, speaking of statistics and figures and so forth, one of the things that we know is that there are a lot of people who listen to this radio station, and most of them don't support it. Now, I'm not sure why that is. You can think about that yourself. But what we would like to do here is to say to people who do listen to WILL regularly and frequently, if you're not a supporter, why don't you turn that around and take the opportunity to do it? Maybe you don't want to go to the telephone and make the call now. Well, that's okay. You can go online, or you can wait until the end of Focus 580. You can do that. So you can go to willpledge.org. You can do that. Again, we've always said the great thing about the internet is it's always there. Well, you can do that anytime or at noon if you want. You could call 217-244-9455. You know, whatever. As long as you do it today, that would be great, because we're in the next to the last day, actually, of our fundraising effort. Tomorrow, it'll be over, and we'll be getting back to our regular programming, hopefully with the support of lots of people who listen. One of our producers is here in the studio with me, Martha Deal.
And it's easy to make that pledge. Call 217-244-9455. And it takes just a moment. I've been there manning the phones, and it doesn't take long at all. The best part about giving to WILL is You decide how much to give. Many listeners have chosen to support a dollar a week, just $52 a year. And when your contribution gets combined with that of your neighbors and people in our listening area, it comes up to a significant amount of money. And we do rely on your support to bring you continued programming. Please call 217-244-9455 or go to willpledge.org.
All right. Well, I'd just like to introduce again the guests that we have joining us this morning. They're both with us by telephone. Lisa Massengill is an assistant information services librarian at the Health Sciences Library at the U of I Chicago, where she works on providing reference services in library instruction and web design and maintenance. Susanna Fox is with the Pew Internet and American Life Project. Before that, she worked at U.S. News and World Report, where she was an editor for their website. She's also been a researcher for Real Networks and the Harwood Group, and she speaks often on topics including the impact of the Internet on healthcare, also issues like privacy and security online, and also issues involving people who have limited access to the Internet. We're talking this morning in this hour about health information, who uses it, who seeks it out, and particularly the fact that now more and more people are using the Internet to get their health information. Questions, comments from people who are listening are certainly welcome. The number, if you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. I want to go back to something that I think Susanna Fox mentioned, and that is if you look at concerns people have about how accurate the information is, the online information, and how accurate it is, it seems like the mainstream sources are the ones that seem to be most accurate. And the ones that consider themselves, you know, complementary alternative, theirs may be where they're not quite as accurate. And I know that people are interested in departing from the mainstream. And sometimes in non-mainstream methods, you know, there's benefit. But I guess I wonder how you think people can and should size all this up, particularly if they are looking for alternative and complementary kind of sources and maybe paths to deal with whatever it is they're dealing with.
Well, I should hasten to say that the study was one that's published in the journal Cancer. It's not my study. So if someone has a question about it, I would be happy to put that information on my website at epatients.net. But in terms of looking at how many people are searching for this, I think that the cancer researchers who did the study were especially interested because people with chronic conditions are more likely than other people to be searching the Internet for alternative treatments or medicines. We found that in our most recent survey, 42% of e-patients with chronic conditions are looking for that sort of alternative treatment, compared to 25% of people with no chronic conditions. Experimental treatments are also more popular with people with chronic conditions. 30% of people with chronic conditions have looked for that sort of information. So this is really sort of top of mind for people who are facing a lifelong or a serious condition, and that's why I think the cancer researchers wanted them to be on their guard. And since this is a medical journal, it's targeted at doctors, most likely, who are reading it. And Lisa can back me up about who reads those medical journals most of the time because they're very expensive. But talking to doctors and asking them to talk to their patients, which many people say is the key to all this. That's the key to what people are calling participatory medicine, which is that doctors and patients and caregivers should all work together and share information and make sure that these Internet searches are out in the open so that patients tell their doctors about what they find online.
Well, that goes back to something that I think, Lisa, you said that, and I'm sure that doctors would share that recommendation and people in healthcare would share that recommendation, and that is, whatever you're thinking about, whatever you might be doing or thinking about doing, you really should talk about that with your doctor before doing anything.
That's right. And some, like, complementary sites have gotten better, even putting on some of the evidence for, when they make, does this particular herb or treatment actually work? They'll actually link it to evidence. Has there been a clinical trial or have they done a study? So some sites have gotten better in terms of, you can kind of evaluate, is the information good there? But you also always do want to kind of talk to your doctor or health professional before you make any decision, because you also have to take into account, this might work for this person or these group of people, but if you have other conditions, you have to take that into account. Is there going to be negative interactions? So you don't want to really take a step before you kind of have gotten a complete treatment plan together with a doctor.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any, Lisa, do you have any reading on how it is that doctors feel about this proliferation of information on the web and the fact that they might have patients who have done all this research and come armed with all this information when they come to see the doctor?
Mixed reaction. At UIC, we're definitely going toward evidence-based medicine. So, doctors are trying to do more reading for, when making their decisions, do they have evidence to make that decision? And with patients coming in, it does kind of change their thinking. But at the same time, we know in libraries, if something is mentioned on Good Morning America, we could have a rush of people coming in, either thinking they have this disease or want an article. So it does make people more active. It does make them more involved with their health care, but there can be a rush on things that have nothing to do with most populations. So there's mixed reviews. I think most doctors are happy about it, but there are cases when they kind of wish maybe people didn't do as much searching.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you've had that experience or know of that experience, and that something gets attention, and then people start worrying, do they have that thing? And suddenly everybody wants to know about that?
Yeah, we more so when I worked in a public library, but you would, if something had been mentioned on a morning show, you would have several people call in, like, do you have information about this? And some of our databases actually have the transcript so we could go look it up and, get things together so we know people were coming in to ask about it. But, again, we always do want to encourage people to be active, but sometimes you kind of wish wouldn't be as much of a rush on every new disease or whatever that comes out.
Yeah. Let me turn back here to Susanna Fox. I would think that maybe having all this information available and having an information available 24 hours a day might be, for those people that we call the worried well, those people who maybe are basically fine but have this tendency to worry a lot or to every time they hear about something new, they decide they've got it, that might actually, I'm not sure whether having all that information at their fingertips is necessarily helpful. Maybe it is if it reassures them, but maybe not if it tends to reinforce the idea that somehow maybe they've got a problem that they don't really have.
It's a great question. I actually have not done a study that would pin that down. We do find that most people have positive feelings about their internet searches. There are small groups that say they felt frightened or overwhelmed. In terms of the doctor-patient relationship and that some doctors are maybe sometimes feeling overwhelmed to themselves by patients who bring in a lot of material, the studies that I've seen say that that's the exception and not the rule. I saw a study this year that was published in a medical journal about how patients who were given a doctor's email address were very respectful of their doctor's time. They only asked questions that were on point to an upcoming surgery, for example, and the doctors found that they were able to answer those emails more quickly than if the patients were restricted, as most of us are, to using the phone. And so there are some benefits to an increased use of technology beyond the fear of patients coming in with stacks of printouts from the internet, that is the exception and not the rule.
One of the things that I think people will know is if they do a kind of a a blind search, or at least in if they go onto the web and they put some very broad term in their search engine, they're going to get a gazillion hits. And they may not, probably only a small fraction of them will be useful, and chances are probably a good percentage of them will be sites where they what they really want to do is sell you something. How, I wonder, and maybe both of you can talk could talk about a little bit about this, in tailoring your searches, are there some particular tips or tricks that will help you get more, you know, sort of less junk and more information that really is going to be useful to you? And maybe I'll ask Lisa to, since she's the medical librarian, I'll ask you to take a shot at that.
That's a good question. A lot of times, yeah, people can kind of narrow their search, like if they're interested in, like, diabetes, are they interested in treatment or therapy or pain management? Like, you know, just trying to get specific on what you're actually looking for on that topic, because if you just do diabetes, you are going to get millions of hits.
Mm-hmm.
So get into kind of what, focus down on what do you want to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
But we always just say, you know, feel free, like as medical librarians, you know, ask people to come in and talk to us, because this is what we do all day, is to help people with their searching. But the main tip we do tell them is, you know, really just try to figure out what are you trying to get at and figure out what the best terms would be, you know, if you're just going to do a general Google search, to get more on point for what you're really looking for.
I don't know, Susanna, anything you'd want to add to that?
Yeah, what we found is that the scenario you described is exactly right, that a general search is the de facto second opinion right now in the United States. People will go online to prepare for a doctor's appointment or to recover from a doctor's appointment by doing a search. The good news is that these big search companies have recognized that, and they are creating more and more what they call health vertical search engines, where for example, Google or Ask.com they recognize that you're doing a health search, and they start giving you results that are tailored to good health websites. And when I use the word good, it's their choice. Google Health, Ask.com, and other organizations are feeding that kind of information, sort of vetted health websites, to consumers. Consumers can also skip that step and go straight to an independent vertical health search. One that I know of is Healia.com, H-E-A-L-I-A. Another one is Organized Wisdom. There are lots of vertical health searches where people are given suggestions. So you might type in diabetes, and then it will give you suggestions about, well, what exactly are you interested in? And therefore, people are sort of led along the path, like you would hope people would be led along by a wonderful medical librarian. But libraries close often at 6 o'clock, and your health, those health questions pop up at the most inconvenient time.
Mm-hmm.
And so these vertical health searches are trying to fill the gap.
I think that one of the reasons that we might have, Ms. Fox, one of the reasons that we might have thought about talking with you was that we came across a quote, and I think it was in a story in the New York Times, and essentially you just said it, and I really like it very much, and the quote was that for people who were looking for more information after a diagnosis, that Google is the de facto second opinion. And I can, you know, and I can see maybe that's good if in the past people weren't getting second opinions at all, or maybe hopefully they still will get second opinions. But you wonder exactly, well, what are the implications of that? That in fact Google has become the de facto second opinion. I mean, I suppose is that good or bad or otherwise?
Well, I don't know if it's good or bad. It certainly seems to be human nature. The survey that I'm going to field this fall is going to try and open up that question again and ask people about other sources, because we know that humans are pretty social animals. We don't just rely on one person for opinion. For many people, before we had the internet, their mom might have been the de facto second opinion, you know, or a friend or a neighbor. People are often talking to each other about health questions and wellness questions. And what the internet has done is allowed us to bring together many sources into one little search box. And again, it flattens out the world so that you may not ever meet anyone with that same concern or that same health question. But the search engine has seen that question before and is doing more and more targeting to connect each user to the best information that search engine can find. It's still an open question about whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. Another study has found that Google was found to be a, quote, good enough diagnostic tool. This was done in Australia, and doctors punched in to Google some symptoms, and Google was able to return articles that brought back the correct diagnosis. And so there's an example where it works, but I'm always keeping my eye out for examples where it doesn't work. And I'm really interested to hear if people have had bad experiences.
One thing I think it's interesting that still, and I think it's probably a good thing, at least according to a different sort of study that looking at the same issue, that is, well, where do people get their health information? This is one thing from it's from the Center for Studying Health System Change, and this was looking at data. It was for comparing 2001 and 2007 and the degree of the change. But I guess the thing that I'm thinking about here is that last year, if you looked at the numbers of people who were looking at books and magazines and newspapers and the numbers of people who were looking at the internet and the number of people that were talking with friends and relatives as a source of information, all three of those, the print sources, the internet, and the friends and relatives, were relatively about the same. So people are still, they're still looking at magazines and papers. They're still talking with their friends and relatives. Here, the big change is in the numbers of people going to the internet. That's really gone up, but it's still on a par. Internet is not really outweighing, not by much, friends and relatives. So that probably is a good thing.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see. And remember, when people go online, they're often using the online world to stay connected to friends and family. They're using email and instant messaging and social networking sites to stay in touch with friends and family. And so it becomes, basically a sort of a networked world where it's offline and online networks all coming together to help people solve problems in their daily lives.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to Lisa and again, see if there's anything, again, in the way of sort of general kinds of advice that you just give to people when they're on the internet and they're looking for health information, and they're looking at health information.
Well, I kind of want to go back to that point of using Google as a second opinion, which I'm leaning toward it being a good thing because I do think it helps inform people with the questions they should ask. If you get a diagnosis, trying to take that in is hard enough, and then being able to go home and process it and do some searching on your own, I think it makes people feel empowered to be able to find some information and then go back to somebody and have, more informed questions if they find some information that they can kind of put together. What are they really concerned with? What are the things that are really going to affect them? So I think for that reason, doing the search with Google is good. I mean, there probably are some negative stories, but for the most part, anecdotally, I've seen most people being able to use that and go back to the doctors we work with and have more informed questions than if they didn't have access to that resource.
Hmm. We're coming down to the point here. We just have a couple of minutes left, and we the discussion has been kind of broad here. I guess I want to make sure, I'll go back to Susanna Fox. Any points you'd kind of like to bring up that we haven't yet touched on?
I guess I would say that the more people learn about this, I think the more they are likely to find that it's something they can bring with them throughout their lives, that people are connecting to the internet at work and then bringing it home to take care of things at home. Students are learning about it at school, And they may not have health questions at this point, but they're honing those skills, which may come in handy when they do have health questions. So I see this trend continuing to rise as people get more and more skilled in doing good searches and finding good quality information, and as we see broadband continuing to rise. Broadband is now in 55% of American homes. We see that continuing to rise over time and reaching into the homes that have traditionally not had access, people with lower levels of education, people with lower incomes, recent immigrants. And so this information society is hopefully going to reach more and more people because people say that it really does help them take better care of themselves and better care of their loved ones.
Lisa, anything that you would like to add?
Well, building on that, I do definitely think like the new technologies are going to definitely change the way we participate in healthcare with, you know, being able to email your doctor or, you know, more medical records going online, people being to have more access to their health records. And, you know, if there would be something where they can kind of interact with that information, it's going to be the wave of the future. And that's going to make people more active in their healthcare. And just in general, again, like I agree with Suzanne, with the information society, we really do have to focus on making sure that more people are involved, because I do think overall that's really going to improve the healthcare system.
Just real quick, let me go back to Susanna, because I'm thinking about this because recently we have had some conversation here on the program on other days about the subject of medical records and their being available electronically, and the fact that people can gather information and then pass that around. Should people have concerns about the security when they're looking for information on the web, and just the fact that that somebody would know that they went to a particular website, and if they want to make sure that that website is not going to provide any information about them to anybody else, is there some way that you can, should there be some kind of provision stated on the website saying we're not going to do that, and should you look for that?
Well, I think that the best defense against that is understanding. Yes, the privacy policies should be in place, but really it's the context of where you're searching, knowing that if it's on your home computer, that that probably will stay at home. Some people are careful not to search about health questions at work because their employers are able to track their health search terms, for example. Looking at the medical records question, we've figured this out in terms of secure online banking and secure financial transactions. And so if the banking industry, as it may these days, has figured out secure transactions for consumers, then the healthcare industry can probably figure out a way to make those information transactions secure as well.
We're going to have to leave it at that, with our thanks to Susanna Fox from the Pew Internet and American Life Project. Ms. Fox, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Lisa Massengale, she is an Assistant Information Services Librarian at the Health Sciences Library at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Lisa, thank you.
Thank you.